Hey, welcome to the Night Church Podcast, where we meet every Friday evening for worship at the Loma Linda University Church for young adults by young adults. We hope this encourages you and someone else you know. Enjoy.
All right. Thank you so much for those that preceded me. I feel like it's a graduation speech where you got to like name everybody that has been up front here on stage for what they've done so far. I will call out those that spoke the last 3 weeks. It was fun listening to those stories, listening to Pastor Kelly speak on Eve. That was cool. Derek speaking on Adam, I didn't think about the loneliness aspect and how he chose Eve, and it was so relatable to an aspect of my life and in my past. Pastor Jesse, it was so cool to have him share with us last week. And here I am, 10 generations after Adam, talking about Noah. A couple years ago, I was here. I had the privilege of right here on the stage. I had the privilege of speaking on the book of Noah. Surprisingly, on the day that I was scheduled to speak, what? Yes, Jonah, yes. Did I say Jonah? Noah. Guys, I'm repeating a sermon here. No, I had the privilege of speaking on Jonah. And surprisingly, on the day I was scheduled to speak, a news broke out that a man had been swallowed by a whale that same day. I was astonished. I found myself trying to connect current events with Jonah, and here it was. And I remember telling you guys to look at your phones, because like this is a one time where you pull out your phones and you don't have to go to the Bible app, because it was that wild. You can imagine me the last week searching for articles about someone finding the Ark of Noah. I didn't find it. But it was cool nonetheless, and it sent me on this rabbit trail, that we're going to be able to discuss here. In the series titled Trust Issues, Can't Trust the Process, even though I was hoping that someone found Noah's Ark, I found something else. You know, while I was searching, I even found myself watching a documentary. I think it's a documentary featuring a Professor Jones who hails from Indiana. In his quest for the Ark of the Covenant, however, it turned out to be the wrong Ark. And by the way, when any of you were young, did you figure out where the Ark of the Covenant was or where Noah's Ark was? Because that was me as a kid. A couple months ago on TikTok or all that stuff, women were going up to the guys and asking, do you think about the Roman Empire? 15 years ago, if you had come up to me and asked me if I thought about the Ark, I would say yes all the time. I wanted to know which cave they had put that Ark of the Covenant, where it was. I Googled, in like the early Google Maps, I checked to see if I could find an outline of the Ark, thinking no one else had. And yesterday morning or yesterday night, I also Googled to see if the new updated satellite imagery would show a little outline of an Ark. Still no Ark. What did dawn on me, though, was that Noah's Ark and the Ark of the Covenant are archetypes of each other. Both signify God's desire to abide with and protect his people through a covenantal relationship. So with that in mind, Noah. The story of Noah starts with a calling. Over the centuries between Adam and Noah, the Bible declares that humanity had become evil to the point that there was only one good guy left. We see in Genesis chapter 6, verse 5 through 18. I'm just kidding, it's not on the screen. The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. The Lord regretted that he had made human beings on the earth, and his heart was deeply troubled. So the Lord said, I will wipe from the face of the earth the human race I have created, and with them the animals, the birds, and the creatures that move along the ground. for I regret that I have made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. How? Well, this is the account of Noah and his family. Verse 9 continues. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked faithfully with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence. It repeats itself, saying, man, this is so corrupt and violent. God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people on earth had corrupted their ways. It's a lot of corruption in these verses. So God said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. I'm surely going to destroy both them and the earth. So make yourself an ark of cypress wood. Yes, the NIV says cypress, but for those of you tree huggers, gopher was like the original term. Make rooms in it and coat it with pitch inside and out. This is how you are to build it. The ark is to be 300 cubits long, 50 cubits wide, and 30 cubits high. Make a roof for it, leaving below the roof an opening 1 cubit high all around. Put a door on the side of the ark and make lower and middle and upper decks. I am going to bring floodwaters on the earth to destroy all life under the heavens, every creature that has breath of life in it. Everything on earth will perish, but I will establish my covenant with you, and you will enter the ark. You and your sons and your wife and your sons with you. I want to focus on Genesis 6:9 for a moment. It states, Noah was a righteous man, the only blameless man living on earth at the time, and he walked in close fellowship with God. I love the idea and the term of walking with God. I think my father introduced that to me through a little joke that he would share with us growing up. And I'll update the joke a little bit. But the joke begins with, oh my goodness, I forgot his name. Forrest Gump. Yes, how do Forrest Gump and Jesus relate? Anyways, Forrest Gump is such a good guy. He dies and he goes to the pearly gates and Peter meets with him. And Peter's like, well, you've got to answer three things, three questions, and then you can come through. First question, how many days of the week start with T? And Forrest says, two, today and tomorrow. And Peter's like, that's not what the answer was, but I'll give it to you. Let's make it harder. How many seconds are there in a year? This one takes a little pause, and Forrest, 12. 12. And Peter's like, how are there 12 seconds in a year? January 2nd, February 2nd, March 2nd. Peter stops him and he's like, I get it. I get the point. Let's make it a little easier or harder. What is God's name? He knew that. Forrest Gump knew it. Our Father, which art in heaven, Harold be thy name. It's Harold. And Peter was like, get in there. He walked with God. Another version that I grew up with was, Andy walks with me, Andy talks with me. So, yeah, he thought it was Andy, but now it's Harold. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, a renowned scholar, observes that Noah is the only individual in the OT described as righteous. I'd like to note that while Abraham is also credited as righteous, it is due to his faith, unlike Noah, who is explicitly named as righteous. This guy is a good guy. He walks with God. I mean, he walks with God. Who else do we know walks with God like that? Enoch. Where did that man go? He was no more on earth. He went to heaven. And so we see Noah explicitly named as righteous, and we see, yes, this man deserves to go on the ark. He deserves to do that. The one individual who consistently walks with God. What does God command Noah to do? He instructs him to build that ark. We notice that the ark is described in terms of size. Well, I won't dive into the specifics of the dimensions or the definition of a cubit. Some people think it's just a forearm, which Can you imagine? Like, let's build our house with 4 cubits. We'll use his arm as a reference. We receive dimensions for a long rectangular box. Nowhere did you hear God say, a flood is coming, and I need you to build a box with a rudder, a wheel, maybe a little motor in there, a ballast. No, we've just got a rectangular box with a giant door on one side. This is just fascinating. This whole time I thought he was building a boat. And that whole time I was searching Google, I was looking for a boat. I didn't find it. Anyways, the dimensions of the ark aren't as significant as the connections it holds with other objects that we see later in the story of Israel and its relationship with God. You see, in the wilderness, God commands Moses to build an ark so that he may dwell among them, establishing a covenant with his people. In David's time, a temple is built with the same ark in it, symbolizing that ongoing covenant between the people of God, signifying God as their guide and protector. Similarly, in the narrative of Noah, we witness a literal covenantal relationship between God and Noah, where God uses an object that he gave dimensions for to literally abide with those people and protect Noah and his family throughout the duration of a whole year. Yeah, guys, I did not know that they were in it for a whole year. I don't think I had read Noah post-COVID, but I must say they were the ultimate experts in social distancing. I mean, 12 months isolated with 7 other people and a bunch of animals. It reminds me of COVID first started. Oh, man, we are the generation where it's, well, most of us here are the generation where they ask us where we were on 9/11. We probably can't remember. But can you remember the weekend that COVID shut down here in Loma Linda? Yeah? I can. I was backpacking. I had gone up, actually near where we're having the retreat, Forest Falls. I'd gone up and backpacked for a couple days with a couple of buddies. It was serene, it was beautiful, and I was already social distancing before it was cool. But on the way back down, I received an arc load of texts. Madeline messaged me saying her family had been in contact with a couple people suspected of having COVID, and they were going into isolation. Do you want to join? I haven't even showered yet from backpacking. I said no. During that time, Maddie and I found ourselves dating from a distance. We'd been dating for about 2 years at that point. We take walks and keep our 6-foot distance, 2 cubits, and watch shows in her garage, always maintaining that 6-foot distance. I've never wished for a measuring tape calibrated for shorter distances so much in my life. Could it be 5, 4, maybe 3 feet apart, even though the measuring stick says 6 feet? Noah's family were the truly ultimate social distancers. Can you imagine the mental health issues that could have arisen in his life? I mean, we've talked for the past few years and noticed that COVID really did something on our mental psyche for many of us. But we've got a family here that is witnessing something much wilder. After around a time of 1 year, Noah finally leaves the ark. He does so after God in Genesis 8:16 tells him to come out of the ark. Some of you might remember he sent some birds out because he didn't want to go out himself. He'd rather send the birds. And finally, one doesn't come back, and he still waits a week. And God's like, go out. Go out. And the author Ellen White shares about how he was just waiting for God to just give him the next instruction. Yeah, I mean, that could be the case. And then COVID happened to me, and I was like, yeah, I'll stay inside. I'll wait. I'll let someone else do it. And then God commanded. This is where my rabbit trail, honestly, it's not a rabbit trail, right? This is where my little, like, I was my rabbit hole. I ended up in a rabbit hole realizing a connection with Jewish theologians that went through the Holocaust and how they viewed the story of Noah. And one of them talks about thinking that Noah was kind of cautious in going in because of what he had experienced. I'll share that shortly. Let's read Genesis 9, 20 to 24. Noah, a man of the soil. Oh, hold on, let me go back. After an amount of time, Noah comes out of the ark. Is this the same Noah that came out? Well, what we do know is that Noah first worshiped God. He builds him that altar, and he sees that everything has been fulfilled, that God said, yes, we are good to go. We are good to go. But what about after? Well, Genesis 9, 20 to 24. Noah, a man of the soil, proceeded to plant a vineyard. When he drank some of its wine, he became drunk and lay uncovered inside his tent. Ham, the father of Canaan, saw his father naked and told his two brothers outside. But Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it across their shoulders. Then they walked in backward and covered their father's naked body. Their faces were turned away so that they could not see their father naked. When Noah woke from his wine and found out what his youngest son had done to him, he said, "Cursed be Canaan, the lowest of slaves will he be to his brothers." Man, I just said 5 minutes ago, Noah walked with God. And now this man's naked, undressed, in a tent, no less. Now let's take a pause and consider the possibilities of mental health on anyone going through a literal Holocaust. I mean the term Holocaust because Holocaust means destruction on a mass scale. Noah has lived through a Holocaust and is on the other side. Elie Wiesel, a Jewish author and World War II Holocaust survivor, when reflecting on the life of Noah, offers a poignant insight. He calls Noah the first survivor. The world was now a giant graveyard, and he couldn't face it. Eli then says that the Torah alludes to Noah's reaction to the destruction is to build a garden. That's good, right? I mean, when we hear about major destructions, we hear about people being like, all right, let's build. Lahaina gets burned, let's build. Katrina, let's build. Wait, Noah, you're building the first Napa Valley? And you're going full vineyard on us? Wiesel continues to add that Noah built something that could easily lead him to soothe the soul after a major event. Well, another rabbit hole.
I'm so glad that you've been listening to the first part of the sermon. This sort of production does require some financial cost. If you'd like to reach more young adults with this across the world, would you consider giving at praxisministry.org? You can select the Praxis Young Adult envelope. Enjoy the rest of the sermon.
That rabbit hole is later on. Okay, another possibility in Noah's actions could be attributed to the significant emotional and physical preparation he underwent for what might have been over a century, with building the ark being his ultimate purpose. Perhaps, upon completion, he struggled to adjust to a new purpose given to him by God. Instead of pivoting to continue sharing the story of God, he embarked on a side project. This scenario resonates with me a lot personally. I'm not here to criticize side projects. After all, I think I'm the king of side projects. I started writing my list and then I had to stop because I realized all I wanted to do was do those side projects. Well, we see Noah planting a garden. I see myself buying a guitar 3 years ago to refurbish it. I have all the parts. It's still there. I see myself buying gardening equipment. There's no garden at my house. I see myself starting to read a book. This book exactly, and maybe 13 others. They're not finished. I'm familiar with those side projects and navigating life after fulfilling a purpose. Like Pastor Phil said, I graduated last year with 2 degrees, and I got married. I kept telling people 2023 was the year of Gus. I accomplished everything. got that master's in bioethics, which I was kind of more proud of than that DDS degree. However, the darkest times followed as I grappled with feeling lost and purpose, without purpose, compounded by the failure of one of my skills board exam for the second time due to a grave mistake. I had to relive that as I was writing this. I'll tell you right now, I don't know if many people know, but I had to retake a board exam, and I had practiced. I had practiced, and then I showed up at 6 a.m. I'm supposed to drill a crown on this tooth. I did it on this tooth. That was an automatic failure, and I just cried in bed. I thought that was it. I didn't know when the next one was going to take. And I ended up in Minnesota 3 weeks later, spending $3,000 just to take a two-hour exam. I did not have that purpose. It was tough. But after all that, after the major accomplishes, I was like, God, what is next? I felt like Noah. Anyways, Noah had time. He had time to make a whole vineyard. How do I know that? Well, I needed to know how long it takes for a vineyard to grow. So I went down that rabbit hole. I don't know if it was faster back then. People talk about there possibly being more oxygen in the air or the land being more fertile. What I know now is that it takes 3 years for a vine to grow grapes to maturity, and then bottling it so that it can be alcoholic will take a couple years after that. We're talking 4 to 5 years. That's a long side quest for Noah. But it also shows that Noah getting drunk and getting naked or being naked afterwards wasn't just like 3 weeks after the flood. That man had been grappling with stuff for a while. For a while. And we're talking seasons, right? The man known for the biggest Holocaust in the Bible is also the man who goes through a dark season. So what was Noah's trust issue? Seeing through the lens of these Jewish theologians, Noah didn't trust the next phase of God's plan. He had been caught up in the massive undertaking that is planning the ark and the subsequent reliance on survival that the next stage of his life where a positive blessing is bestowed on his family, he's unable to fulfill it. He's stuck in the last purpose. He's stuck in not seeing what's next. Jewish tradition states that Noah did not have any more children, thereby not fulfilling that call of God to go out and create more. God calls us to follow him for a lifetime, not just a moment or big transitions of our lives when we need direction. Or not just in the moments during your education when that test is hard or that you fail that board exam. Or before you're finding a spouse and you're asking God, please keep them safe, or don't let them date anybody else until I find them. God is calling us to follow the entire time, right? Or when you're looking for a job. I had a patient this morning who, while I was working on her, was just on Indeed the whole time. Like right now, it doesn't matter that your tooth hurts. It was, I need to know what's next. I don't know what my purpose is. And I mean, it was that little prayer that I sent up to God during the time of prep. I know God will take care of her. Eugene Peterson, author of The Message Bible Translation, also wrote another book titled A Long Obedience in the Same Direction, in which he borrows from Friedrich Nietzsche. Now, I have quoted Tupac in presentations, but I've never quoted Friedrich Nietzsche. But thanks to Eugene Peterson, here we are. Nietzsche noticed and posited that the most important meaning is to find a standard and stick to it, which in an era of, oh man, I'm forgetting the term, I didn't even write it down, in an era of moral relativism, we find ourselves with a wildly unpopular idea. The Christian journey, Eugene Peterson continues, alongside a narrative from Pastor Phil, is that the Christian journey is a long walk in the way and in the direction with Jesus through the good, bad, and the after. But here's the cool part of it all. We don't know much about Noah after he curses his son after getting caught naked. What we do know is that there is evidence of a good God who endeavors to continue blessing those in that generation afterwards, and he continues to protect them, who continues wanting to walk side by side with his people. I mean, it would have been awesome to see after the flood, Noah faithfully restored to walking with God and being that same person. But we don't see that explicitly. We don't see that in the Old Testament narrative. What we know is that God is faithful to those even as they are not faithful. What season are you in this life? A season of faithfulness? Are you not as faithful? When you were a kid or living at home, did you have a tight walk with Jesus? Did you have a tight walk with Jesus last year when COVID started in March 2020? What about when you had a girlfriend or boyfriend? Did you find yourself being a better person while with them? What was your walk life? Noah is credited as one of the pillars of faith, for he saw what was to be and followed God's guiding hand in protecting him. He saw his mission and fulfilled it, even if he didn't fully embrace the next mission given to him and his family. But we know that even though Old Testament literature doesn't give us a clear ending, New Testament literature deems Noah a holy man amidst all of this, as he seems to have had that long obedience in the same direction. And we can see that because we have a good God who desires to protect those who love and who he loves and love him. We find ourselves in communion and in a continued covenantal relationship with the one who is faithful to his covenants. That same God that was with Noah has been running after us, with his goodness and mercy being present all of our days. All of our days. Now that's a covenant that can elicit a song from my soul saying, from the moment I wake up until I lay my head, I'll sing the goodness of God. It's really cool to see the connection between Jesus and Noah. Yes, another archetype in the Bible. First, Jesus could have given up his last moment on earth. He could have understood that his mission could be paused or changed, but he knew that his mission was to the end of his life. Not just spending his time as a kid in Nazareth or fishing in Galilee, but to live his young adult years faithfully in mission. And then even all the way to a cross. Noah shows us the radical first step in following Jesus. Takes courage to be the only one, but it doesn't end there. Jesus teaches us with his example that God wants to use us to the very end of our lives, no matter our mistakes or missteps. Jesus wants us to enter a habit with him, a long journey. All of us are in that journey here, one way or another. I mean, you're here tonight, and we're at different moments of the way. John Mark Comer, in his recently released book, Practicing the Way, Be with Jesus, Become Like Him, Do As He Did. By the way, that's a very long title. But Practicing the Way, he says, now I recognize that turning Jesus into a habit may sound as inspiring as turning romance or laughter or poetry into a habit. In a culture that equates authenticity with spontaneous emotions, habit is a tough sell. As someone who hates habits, this is a tough sell. This book has been difficult to read. But he continues saying, show me a person's habit and I will show you what they are truly most passionate about, most dedicated to, most willing to suffer for, and most in love with, and I will show you who they will become. Following Jesus is rarely full of glamour. It is a daily rhythm that becomes second nature. In this book, he tells a story of an 18th century priest observing a peasant. This peasant would come into the church and just sit there for hours. And after some time, the priest asks the peasant, what are you doing? And the old man simply replied, I look at him, he looks at me, and we're happy. I can only imagine Noah being that same person. So as you consider the life of Noah, we've got two beautiful things. The story throughout the Bible that shows this man, he faltered. And yet he's known as one of the most faithful guys in all of the Bible. And this same man was known to be, or was just given that name, walked with God. What a place to rest. Above all this, I know my prayer for my life and my prayer for your life is that when people look at you in this slow and daily rhythm of life, they'll see, oh yeah, he's walking with God. Oh yeah, she's walking with God. That couple, they're walking with God. Not because of anything big, not because of any massive event, but because of the quiet daily rhythms of life. So will you today get back up and keep walking with the Lord, asking him, God, what is my mission today? What is my mission this season? God, I'm kind of without purpose. I did it all. Each one of us has that unique story. But practicing the way, it's all the same. It's all the same. Just abiding with Jesus. So, I think it's awesome that we get the chance to praise God, see the goodness of God. I've got nothing else. Let's worship.
Thank you so much for listening to the Night Church Podcast. We hope you've been blessed by this sermon, and if you have, maybe you can share this with a friend. If you'd like to stay in touch, you can follow us on social media at Praxis Ministry, or come visit us in Loma Linda on a Friday evening. We'll see you in the next episode.